repetition of the law. Moses retells the entire historical saga of the nation of Israel in this book. We can only imagine that this group of ex-slaves living in the desert must have been awed once again by the story of this amazing history. As they prepared to move into the promised land, Moses wanted to be absolutely sure that the people understood God's laws and regulations, his promises, and his blessings. The warnings about the consequences for their disobedience. It was critically important that each generation of Israelites remember all that God had done for the chosen people. It was written just before about 1400 BC, 1406 BC, and it was to help the new generation of Israelites understand how God wanted them to know, love, and interact with him. And so today, when I read these few chapters, if you have that in context, it might help to understand it a little bit better. Starting at verse 11, "Now what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven, so that you have to ask, 'Who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so we may obey it?' Nor is it beyond the sea, so that you have to ask, 'Who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it?' No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction." The second reading today is from 1 Corinthians 3 verses 1 through 9. And this was written for the church in Corinth by the Apostle Paul. And it was about 55 AD. So it was after Jesus' earth. And it was written to help the church solve their problems. So starting at verse 3, or chapter 3, verse 1 through 9. "Brothers, I could not address you as spiritual, but as worldly, mere infants in Christ. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly, for since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men? For when one says, 'I follow Paul,' and another, 'I follow Apollos,' are you not mere men? What, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building."
Thanks, Mary, for the sermon. I think I'm done now. I appreciate the context. And Don, thank you for your sermon. I would disagree with you humbly. I don't think those songs were random at all. They're right on. Thanks. And Sharon reminds us about this continuing struggle for peace when we think we got it. Just look a little bit farther away, we see there's some work to do. We started our sermon series here in January, beginning with the ministry of Christ. You remember the River Jordan, remember the Baptist, John the Baptist, started the ministry at the River Jordan. By the way, the selection Mary just read out of Deuteronomy, a book we haven't really looked at too much this year, is Moses looking across the River Jordan. The other way. He's looking into Jordan. That was the promised land, remember? These slaves have been wandering for 40 years in a stinking desert. And here's Moses giving his last testimony in Deuteronomy. Now, 2 weeks ago, we compared Jesus' ministry with other wise men. We talked about Confucius. You recall? Confucius is considered a wise man in most of Asia. And he has some good points. He talks about the power of wisdom. He talks about the strength of family and the honor of elders. Nothing wrong with that, right? I think Jesus would agree. And then we compare Jesus' ministry to Muhammad. Remember? Muhammad, the prophet. Muhammad. Muhammad claimed nothing but pointing the way to Allah. Allah, the great God, a God of domination. We contrasted that with Jesus' ministry of love, peace, forgiveness, and ultimate redemption. Let's try it again today. My wife Mary and I spent last week in San Francisco on Nob Hill, riding the cable cars up and down the hills and eating great Chinese food in Chinatown. What urban culture San Francisco is. What a wonderful journey into new worlds that we don't have here in Colorado. And we began to watch and look around, and we noticed something. The ever-presence of a little guy. Kind of a chubby guy. Buddha. He was everywhere. Laundromats. Restaurants. Taxi cabs. He was riding on the dashboard. So we began to look at what that image really meant to folks in this culture. We asked the cab drivers and the store cashiers, the waitresses and the seamstresses, hey, what's this little statue mean? The response wasn't particularly inspiring. The most common response was, if you put a coin on Buddha's stomach, you get good luck. That was the usual reply. Not one person could tell us about the message of Buddha. His message was called the Eightfold Path. You may recall that. It's his idea of a road to enlightenment. It's a difficult road. It's not an easy road. It's not an easy path. You see, you have to work very hard, and not everybody makes it. Because there's so many paths. It made me wonder about the Anabaptist path. The path to peace and justice through Jesus. Did Buddha have the final answer on peace? Some say so. Or did Jesus have another, fuller perspective on what we seek? Let's inquire about that. Let's look a little bit closer here in the next 18 minutes. You have sermon notes. They're not complete because my thoughts weren't complete on Monday, so bear with me. But it starts with Deuteronomy. And before we go there, lift up your eyes and take a look around. Notice the colors, the sun shining in on the frames and the images in the sanctuary. Isn't art wonderful? We've had three shows now. I really like that about this church. How can we take in all this color and shape and make sense of it? How does that work? How does our brain translate the feeling tone of the greens and the yellows and the oranges into meaning? Try thinking about art as a metaphor. A metaphor is holding two things in your mind at one time. Here, the paint and the meaning. You hold both of those in your mind, and something new may come out. A metaphor is also a way of speaking. Words and symbols behind those words. Much of the scripture is metaphoric. It's used to share important concepts, like the ones we heard today from Mary. It comes from the Greek word metaphoric. Webster's defines metaphor as an object, an activity, an idea used to symbolize something else. Metaphor is a phrase or word picture, similar to the words or the pictures that come to you today on the wall. So, Deuteronomy 30. I call it the easy commandment. I don't know if that's scholarly or not, but it's an easy commandment. But hold on. This is a testimony from Moses. Isn't this the guy who went up on the mountain, saw a burning bush, and brought down 10 commandments? It's the same one, isn't it? This commandment is repeated as a metaphor in Deuteronomy to help us bridge the Old and the New Testament. That's hard to put those two together. They're kind of different, aren't they? Different writers, different times. So this is a bridge. Jesus repeated Deuteronomy in his ministry. And he was reaching down through the ages to us in the 21st century to help us make meaning of his ministry. This passage is a fourfold path. It's not the eightfold path of Buddha. It's a fourfold path. And it's for us as individuals to look at. Listen to the metaphors. You read them. The Word. The Word. That's not the words on the pages. It's a metaphor. The Word. Then there's this sentence, four paths through this world. Those aren't paths we're going to walk on. That's our life. It's a metaphor. And then a commandment. This is taken out of the context of the Ten Commandments and is a larger message. It's a metaphor. Can you hear the easy commandment? Did you catch it in the passage? It's right at the end. It's real simple. It says, love the Lord your God. That's the message. Notice some things about this verse that we read today. The commandment or the message here, the testimony, is two-way. It's a give and receive. If you read it again, it's going this way. Anybody a mathematician here? I think we got a couple. We got some engineers. We got some mathematicians. We've got some high school students. Do you remember the law of modus ponens? This is not a test. I forgot about it until lately. The law of modus ponens, it's in geometry. It says that we can think of certain parts of the world in an if-then equation. If X, then Y, and then you can write an equation, right? And you can balance the equation on each side. Remember that part? You guys graduated from high school? Come on. All right, well, I'll continue then. Let's look at this as an if-then statement. It says, if you love the Lord your God and walk in His ways, then God will bless you. You will live. If, then. It's unusual in the Pentateuch, which is the Torah, to have a relational statement. Because the Hebrews really looked at God as a kind of a one-way. This one's saying it's both ways. You got to give. You got to meet in the middle. You got to have a relationship. By the way, what is the fourfold path? Did you catch that one? This is for us. Life, prosperity, or growth. Translation is growth. Death and destruction. Four paths. We get to choose. God gives us a choice in the peace path we take. Life and growth and renewal come when we love the Lord. Enough said. 1,400 years later, Jesus comes on the scene. By the way, he had studied the Torah from a very early age. Some say from 10. By 12, he was able to argue with the scribes in the temple at Jerusalem about the first five books of our Bible at age 12. He calls Deuteronomy authoritative. That means it carries some authority, some credibility. We should pay attention to that. And let's take a look. The metaphors now in Corinthians connect back through Jesus to Deuteronomy. Now, is this going to be random? I hope not, Don. You used that word. I'm trying to make this not random, but it's broad. It's a wide, wide river. It's a 4,000-year river of God's love. That's what this is. We're just going to take 1,400 years. We're now, as Mary noted, after Christ's death and resurrection. He's gone. Churches are growing. Paul, the Apostle Paul, is struggling to bind them together. It's a story of struggle. He is writing a letter, his first letter to the Corinthians. Let's look at it. He's using metaphors. He's taken metaphors from Jesus' ministry. And he's talking to us. What are the metaphors? You caught them. Worldly infants. Is he writing a letter to babies? No, he's talking to us. Worldly infants. Planting and watering seeds. Isn't that an interesting metaphor? Somebody waters these plants every week. They fertilize them. What's that got to do with us? And then here's this really interesting metaphor, God's field. What are we supposed to make of this mixed metaphor? What do you think about this odd word choice? How could I really worship a God that gives me that complex an idea? Well, Jesus said it wasn't so complex. In fact, Jesus said, keep it simple. So Paul writes with simplicity. He uses simple metaphors to a church in Corinth, the church of his greatest hope and his greatest conflict. This church, in fact, was so divided, it was ready to self-destruct. True story. And he's not there. He's in jail. They were having disputes. They're having disputes about doctrine and leadership. They were arguing about which minister was right. Was it Paul? Paul, the one who was the founder of the church, who was a Pharisee converted to Christianity? Or was it Apollos? Did you catch that word, Apollos? Who's that guy? Apollos is a Greek word. Apollos actually is another Jew from Alexandria. He's classically trained in Alexandria of Egypt. And he's a Christian. He's not preaching the same thing as Paul is. And they've got a divided church. So, he sends his letter. He gives the church a fourfold path. This is not the individual fourfold path that Moses testified. This is a church's fourfold path. Check it out. He says, first of all, stop jealousy, quarreling, and division. He says the path to peace is quite basic. First, it's about serving. Something we know about in this church. Don't need a lecture from Paul about that, do we? But then he says, in addition to service, you are called God's fellow workers. Y'all are partners. Whoa, that's an interesting one. An interesting metaphor, a fellow worker. He says, serve one another and the community and be humble about it. It'll bind us together. He says, serve those less fortunate than we are. He goes on a little bit. Second path. We're not so smart. My grandma used to tell me, Polly, I was the eldest grandson, she said, Polly, if you're so smart, why aren't you president? And I said, well, Grandma, that's a humbling idea. Paul's saying it in a nice way. He's saying, we don't do anything. We plant the seeds. Maybe we water the seeds. Who makes them grow? Come on, who makes things grow? Who makes things abundant? Who creates? Not me. God's the one. That's the one we worship here. That's why we come once a week. We just say, put it all aside, because there's somebody bigger than me. Thirdly, the third path, we, you and me, become God's field. Really? That's an odd metaphor. A field? Yeah, we're the soil that grows in creation. And lastly, the fourth path for the church is be God's building. Yeah, we got that one. We got a building, right? It's paid for. We've done that already. Don't need to hear this sermon. Wait a minute. It's a metaphor. Time out. What's God's building? You are. I am. I think there's a little passage in the Bible that says we are God's holy temple. We, us, take care of his temple. Take care of each other, Paul is saying here. Because wherever, anywhere, two or more are gathered, you remember that one? Then I am there. It only takes two of us. We got a few more. Thank heavens. And then, to top this building off, if you read just a little bit further in this passage, you'll come down to 1 Corinthians 3:11. Have you spent much time with that one lately? We say we're Mennonites. What was Menno Simon's favorite verse in the Bible? It's right there. It's connected up to Paul's letter to this broken church. I'll quote it for you if you don't have your Bible. For no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. The church is built on that foundation. That's what Menno Simon loved. And by the way, I don't think he built a single church. The church was the people. So, let's conclude. God's building is when we're here. It's our church. But we get to work at it because we're fellow workers of God. We get to work at it, at keeping it whole in our thoughts, in our words, in our deeds. The fourfold path, remember? Serve, be God's fellow workers, be his field, love a God of growth, and be the building that God will live in. That's what it says in Deuteronomy. The word is in your heart and on your tongue. You're the building. You know, our world is still seeking answers. I don't know if you caught this one. I'll close with Time Magazine. Did you read this one? It's called The Mindful Revolution. Some of you read it. I was fascinated by it. For $350, I can go to a seminar and I can get cured of all my stress. I like that idea. Let me read to you what it says. It says there's a mindful revolution going on in the 21st century. It builds on Buddha's teachings. It says we should slow down. That's what my $350 would buy me. Slow down. I think Jesus would agree with that. I would agree with that. I'm kind of busy. Some say I'm ADD. But Jesus said, be mindful of loving the Lord. That's the mindfulness. It's more than slowing down. Jesus gave us a fourfold path. Be mindful by giving back, because we've been blessed. We give back because we've been blessed. Serve others by becoming God's partner. Be fellow workers with God. Thirdly, God's the one that makes things grow. And then be God's field and God's building. Stand together as the Lord's church. That's mindful. That's a fourfold path. That's bringing peace to life.